The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, 40 Under 40 Awards, Here to Win. We recognize the top leaders under the age of 40 for their proven performance in their respective industries and communities. And as there are 40 question and answer articles, we'll read the three of them that were pictured on the front page. The first one is Ben Abram, CEO, Modern Energy. His age is 38, birthplace Durham, family, wife, and toddler, education, BSE, Civil Engineering and Public Policy Studies, Duke University, and the description of his company, diversified clean energy company that launches, scales, and operates clean energy transition platforms. What accomplishments are you most proud of? Being home with my son for bedtime most nights of the week, maintaining and strengthening a decades-long personal and professional relationship with my co-founder, Mark Labs, working hard to be a good employer locally and in the other jurisdictions where we operate, Texas, New York, and Brazil. What community causes or charities have you been involved in during the past year? I feel drawn to teach the next generation about the energy transition, not just climate change. Last year, Professor Anderson DeQueros and I created and taught a data analytics course at NC Central University's Business School about energy and society. This year, I'm joining Professor Brian Murray at Duke University in co-teaching a similar class to first-year students. I've also been working on a children's book about the topic that I'm excited about, but it's slow going. What is the greatest obstacle you have overcome in your career? When you have a vision to build something that is off the beaten path, it can be difficult to articulate in a way that effectively overcomes inertia. Keeping that lodestar in mind and working in community with others to bring that vision to fruition is the challenge and the fun. Nothing makes me madder than the abuse of power. Who would make the guest list for your dream business lunch? My team's families, one thing that has been sad about hybrid remote work for me is that there are fewer days when people bring their families, including pets, into the office. I miss those days and would love to have more regular team gatherings with everyone's crew. What is your secret talent? Parallel parking. What is a key lesson you have learned along the way? Groups function best when you assume positive intent. Someone did something that surprised you at work or home? Assume they had a good reason for it. If you're curious why they made the choice they did, ask them about what led to that outcome. You'll often find that they did the best they could with the information they had, but may have lacked or ignored an important piece of data to which you were privy. And next we have Dr. Jenna Beckham, physician, obstetrics and gynecology, Wake Med Health and Hospitals. Age 38, birthplace Henderson, family, spouse Harrison, education, BA, anthropology and Spanish, MS, PH, maternal and child health, MD, UNC Chapel Hill. Description, not-for-profit healthcare system committed to improving the community's health and well-being. What accomplishments are you most proud of? I love my work with the hospital's Diversity and Inclusion Council. I am the chair of the Advocacy and Policy Committee, and some of our recent projects have included pronoun pins for employees and gender-inclusive bathroom signage throughout the hospital. Last year, I was also honored to be recognized by the American College of Obstetrician and Gynecologists as an immunization champion for my COVID-19 vaccine efforts among pregnant patients. What community causes or charities have you been involved in during the past year? I am the vice president of the board of the ACLU of North Carolina, the chair of the board of Pro-Choice NC, and the secretary of the board of Equality NC. Much of my community work and engagement is through these fantastic organizations. What is the greatest obstacle you have overcome in your career? At a young age, I was financially responsible for my college education. I was able to graduate with a double major while also working several jobs to help pay my bills. I wouldn't have the career I have today had I not overcome this unforeseen challenge. Nothing makes me madder than inequities and injustices that impact my patients' ability to access care they need and deserve. Also, slow drivers in the left lane on my morning commute. I can be a bit of an impatient driver. Who would make the guest list for your dream business lunch? Terry Gross, David Sedaris, Michelle Obama, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Brian Stevenson, Dolly Parton, and Miss Major Griffin Gracie. What is your secret talent? I have a large mental repository of song lyrics for many music genres, mostly songs released before the year 2000. I also walk my three large dogs solo. What is the key lesson you have learned along the way? I have strong convictions and am not afraid to speak out and speak up. I have had to learn to subdue this energy at times and to let small battles go unfought in an effort to ultimately achieve change on a larger scale. And the last 40 Under 40 winner that we'll read is Desbee McDaniel, co-founder and CEO, Clinispan Health. Age, 28, birthplace, Eden. Family, father, Desbee McDaniel, mother, Monique Joyce. Education, BA, communication, UNC Chapel Hill. Description, influencer software platform for people of color and underserved groups to access clinical research. What accomplishments are you most proud of? We help to make the COVID vaccine safer for communities of color, particularly African Americans. We help to have four times more African Americans in the Novavax COVID trial than the average with our business model. This vaccine went on to gain approval from the Food and Drug Administration less than a year later as a result of that study. Clinispan is creating a measurable impact that I can see and feel in real time. What community causes or charities have you been involved in during the past year? Health equity is our foundational community cause, but we help with all social determinants of health. We work with nonprofits and underserved communities and donate funds to support their internal initiatives and communities unrelated to clinical research directly. We care about all social determinants of health, like financial and social well-being, because it is all a part of someone's overall health and life quality. What is the greatest obstacle you have overcome in your career? Circumstance. As a person from an impoverished community, it is not expected of me to be a technology entrepreneur. It is definitely not expected of me to be a successful, award-winning tech entrepreneur. So the greatest obstacle that I have ever overcome and will ever overcome was making unimaginable progress despite the circumstances I find myself in. Nothing makes me madder than complaining about problems in the world that you take no time, energy, or effort to try to solve on your own, even in the smallest ways. Do not expect others to solve a problem that you can see clearly. Who would make the guest list for your dream business lunch? That list might look like Oprah Winfrey, Jay-Z, Reginald F. Lewis, Janice Bryant Howard, Michael Jordan, and Elon Musk. These are some of the entrepreneurs that I found myself motivated and inspired by in countless ways. What is your secret talent? Painting. I'm a really good painter with very little practice and experience, but almost no one has really seen that side of me. I always surprise myself how well my art turns out when it is finished. And what is the key lesson you have learned along the way? Sometimes you have to be willing to take risks alone before ever getting support. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Why affordable housing is a challenge. A splashy presentation about some of Raleigh's success along Hillsborough Street and the Blue Ridge Road corridor included a sobering look at the challenges for the city when it comes to affordable housing. We do have a housing crisis. We have an affordability crisis, Ralph Retchie, the real estate manager for the city, told a University Club meeting on June 27. We are victims of our own success. The city is looking to address that by buying land, usually at least 2 acres for a project that would yield 130 units, and then leasing the land to a developer. Let me be clear, the city doesn't build affordable housing, Retchie said, but we can buy dirt. But the city isn't the only one in the market for land as developers scramble to meet demand and infill interest and is intense. From White Oak Road to Northbrook Drive and across the city, developers are grabbing lots, slicing up land, and stuffing in homes. Often what is being replaced is aging homes, townhomes, and apartments, the properties appealing to those at lower income levels. So we are losing inventory at a great rate, Retchie said. On the positive side, he said, the city is targeting affordable housing in future corridors for public transportation, such as the bus rapid transit corridors. And Retchie also said the affordable housing units look much the same as those built for market rate. You don't know this is not market rate apartments unless somebody tells you, said Retchie. It's not Cabrini Green. But the challenge is only accelerating as high-paying jobs pour into the Triangle and salary gaps widen. Imagine bailing out a boat with a teaspoon, he said. It doesn't feel that you're getting anywhere. Interest in Wake County continues to soar. Wake County's sustained growth is in full display in a new report from the Wake County Economic Development Team. From October 1 to June 1, the county had 21 companies, including 9 new ones, pledge 1,199 jobs. All that meant a total investment of $269 million. Since October 1, the county has had 83 total development projects, representing a potential job impact of 34,462. Of course, all that won't come to fruition, but there have been 14 client visits, which means someone is kicking the tires. By comparison, Wake County had 37 active projects as of January 31, 2022. Raleigh Company ranks near top. This year's rankings for the top 50 restaurant chains in the nation include two North Carolina companies. The list, compiled by Nation's Restaurant News, ranks restaurant brands based on domestic system-wide sales. Golden Corral of Raleigh ranked number 47 on the list, and Bojangles of Charlotte ranked number 45, though both brands ranked higher last year, number 46 and number 43, respectively. Golden Corral, a 50-year-old buffet chain, reported $1.4 billion in sales in 2022 and 19.7% year-over-year growth. The company fully recovered to pre-pandemic levels in 2022, CEO Lance Trenaria said, and has surpassed its comparable restaurant sales numbers from 2019. Golden Corral is now expanding with new concepts. Bojangles reported $1.6 billion in sales with 8.5% year-over-year growth. CEO Jose Amario recently noted plans to put more of a focus on the customer experience. Bojangles is also testing out a new concept. NC quit rate starts to normalize. So much for the Great Resignation. Following a national trend, North Carolina is seeing a sharp decrease in the rate of workers quitting their jobs, according to data from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. The state's monthly quit rate, which reached as high as 3.9% in 2021, dropped to 2.7% in April and is approaching the 2.4% seen at the outset of the pandemic. The average quit rate was 2.2% between 2013 and 2017. Voluntary separations are often interpreted as a sign of confidence in the labor market, according to the NC Department of Commerce, since most workers are unlikely to quit unless they can find employment elsewhere. A high quit rate in 2021 reflected a nationwide trend of job hopping that saw workers retiring, reconsidering their work-life balance, and demonstrating a reluctance to return to in-person jobs, according to the Harvard Business Review. Swing Project adds a sports giant. The 45-acre racket sport project planned for Briar Creek and Raleigh has gotten a lift, with Wilson Sporting Goods signing a partnership with the Swing Racket and Paddle Campus. The Sports Business Journal reports that Wilson will move some corporate staff from Chicago to the Swing Campus in Briar Creek, while also standing up a research and development lab, a stringing bar, and a retail space. Octagon founder and president Phil DePicciotto, who has invested in Swing, called the move tremendous. It adds another layer of uniqueness and seriousness, even beyond the player side. It's a destination for the future and further development of the sport, he told the SBJ. The project, sparked by entrepreneur Rob Autry, will feature 29 tennis courts, 24 pickleball courts, 16 paddle courts, 4 beach tennis and volleyball courts, and a ping pong lounge. And finally, entrepreneur gets big honor. The Triangle's Donald Thompson landed a big honor recently when Ernst & Young LLP named him a Southeast Award winner in its Entrepreneur of the Year Awards. Thompson is the CEO and co-founder of the Diversity Movement and was selected by an independent judging panel. The Diversity Movement's commitment to creating stronger teams and superior workplaces is at the heart of our work in tying culture transformation to real-world bottom-line results, says Thompson. My commitment centers on helping executives and their teams create culture-centric organizations and culture-centric leaders who are ready to win in the marketplace. And now we turn to the top news story in the Triangle Business Journal. This article written by Kaylee Thompson. New Raleigh Tower tops out as push for tenants continues. The first of two mirroring towers in a more than $1 billion development near North Hills in Raleigh has officially topped out. DeWitt Carolina's 1000 Social at the Exchange Raleigh has completed the initial construction of the final floor of the 12-story office building off St. Albans Drive, east of the North Hills Shopping District. With that, the building is 51% pre-leased. The 353,891 square foot building will have 319,808 square feet of Class A office space, 20,013 square feet of ground floor retail, and about 7,000 square feet of conference space. There is 16,000 square feet of outdoor space, including balconies, terraces, and courtyards. The amount of office space pre-leased is 165,000 square feet with tenants Whitley Law Firm, Summit Design and Engineering Services, which is taking an entire floor, and GFL Environmental. DeWitt Carolinas is also taking space in the building. I think the big story with office buildings today is what we're finding and what you're hearing is the newer, more amenitized office buildings seem to be attracting a lot of users that your standard office building doesn't have. And they're doing that to try to get people back to work, says Todd Said, CEO of DeWitt Carolinas. Some of the tenant fit-ups in here are spectacular, and they're all trying to focus on what it takes to bring that employee back and enjoy their work environment. The Raleigh company hasn't signed any retailers yet, but it is in talks with several, including coffee shops and other food and beverage retailers. Said says most of the interest has been from local companies. The company is currently trying to see if one of the coffee shops can go on the 12th floor to serve tenants on the higher floors. The two towers will also share a parking deck with more than 1,500 spaces. The conference center will be able to be rented by anyone in the building. DeWitt officials say they are ahead of schedule and tenants will be able to start moving in April 2024, with the building fully operational by the end of 2024. The second tower, 2000 Social Tower, won't break ground until the company receives more tenant interest. Plans call for the towers to be connected by a pedestrian skybridge. And now we turn to the reporter pages in the Triangle Business Journal, starting with Lauren Onosorge's page on tech and finance. CHIPS Act could be boost for Wolfspeed. Durham Company has major plans in Chatham County. Wolfspeed has the green light in Washington as the Biden administration is broadening the scope of the CHIPS Act to accommodate projects such as what the semiconductor manufacturer is building in Chatham County. The U.S. Department of Commerce on June 23 said large semiconductor supply chain projects, including those involving the production of certain materials, may now qualify for CHIPS funding. A Commerce Department spokeswoman confirmed the announcement opens up the funding opportunities to wafer manufacturers, including those for silicon carbide materials. That's big news for Wolfspeed. The company officials had feared the Durham firm wouldn't qualify for a piece of the $52 billion in federal incentives for its $5 billion factory under construction in Chatham County. Wolfspeed General Counsel Bradley Cohn wrote the Internal Revenue Service and the U.S. Treasury Department in May, notifying them that the proposed definition for an advanced manufacturing facility centered on semiconductors, quote, excludes essential semiconductor-grade material production facilities, unquote. The Chatham plant outside Siler City is expected to create 1,800 jobs, according to Wolfspeed. It's also supposed to help meet the global demand for silicon carbide, a material used in electric vehicles. The company says the new facility is expected to be the world's largest silicon carbide plant, increasing Wolfspeed's output by 10 times. In April, Chief Financial Officer Neil Reynolds told analysts that the company would need to secure approximately $1 billion of additional non-government financing between now and the end of the calendar year to support its plan to build $2 billion in fiscal to support its plan to spend $2 billion in fiscal 2024, most of which would be spent in North Carolina, both in Chatham and at Wolfspeed's Durham campus. Delta to add lucrative tropical route to RDU international lineup. Raleigh-Durham International Airport's biggest airline by passenger volume is adding to its lineup in time for the winter holidays. Delta Airlines is launching a new Saturday-only service to Cancun starting December 16. Cancun is a familiar seasonal route for Delta, though RDU's sole service to the resort destination is currently offered by JetBlue. Delta's previous stints offering nonstops to Cancun out of RDU have been fruitful, according to numbers from OAG. In 2021, the flight netted Delta nearly $1.5 million. And finally, ECU spinout targets sports locker rooms. Sports Scale Systems, which started in 2011 in a high school locker room as football players lined up for time-consuming weigh-ins, is scaling up. Sharon Rogers Moore, a trainer and faculty member in East Carolina University's athletic training education program, thought there has got to be a quicker way. That got her entrepreneurial wheels turning, and thanks to a colleague in the engineering program, in 2015, we had the patent for the invention. The system automates weight collection. She estimates she funneled $50,000 in savings into the project before a $500,000 seed round in 2020. If she completes this latest round, it will add in another $500,000. ECU's Pirate Entrepreneurship Fund has committed $250,000 in equity to the company. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page, written by Kaylee Thompson. NY developer plans $500 million project, development to add 815 homes, retail in Southern Chapel Hill. A $500 million mixed-use development with up to 50,000 square feet of commercial space is coming to Southern Chapel Hill. Beechwood Carolinas, a New York developer, is advancing plans for South Creek across from Southern Community Park after the Chapel Hill Town Council in June unanimously approved a rezoning. The 815-home development at 4511 South Columbia Street will also have between 21,000 and 52,000 square feet of retail and commercial space. Beechwood Carolina's principal, Stephen Dubb, says South Creek is fully funded through the Beechwood organization without outside equity or capital partners. There will be 120 apartments, 606 condominiums, and 89 townhomes. The apartments will be market rate, while the condos and townhomes will start in the 300,000s and approach the $1 million range. Part of the rezoning came with a condition that 15% of the for sale units and 10% of the apartments must be affordable. All the affordable units must be split in half at 65% of the area's median income and 80% of AMI. The commercial and retail portion will be uses that complement the community, such as food and beverage, retailers, services, office, and medical office. With a big range of potential commercial space, the company is looking to hit the upper end of that square footage. Originally, the company was anticipating breaking ground in late 2024, but Dubb says it is aiming for starting in mid-2024, with first occupants moving in 2025. Based on the input from the town that we've gotten and what we know from doing projects like this in the past, the more quality retail we can build, the better the project is, he says. Streets at South Point will be transformed. The streets at South Point Mall in Durham is in line for big change. The Durham City Council recently approved a zoning map change filed by the mall's owner, Brookfield Properties of New York, to allow for between 1.2 million and 1.445 million square feet of commercial use, up to 300,000 square feet of office space, up to 200,000 square feet of hotel space, with up to 200 rooms, and up to 1,382 apartments. The council passed the measure 5-2, with Mayor Elaine O'Neill and Javier Caballero opposed. A Brookfield spokesperson previously said the goal is to evolve the retail destination into a vibrant mixed-use community hub with additional retail and new housing, hotel, or office offering a wide range of transportation options designed for the future. The zoning covers seven parcels totaling 132.57 acres. And finally, large business park nears completion. A new business park in Wake County near Pine Hollow Golf Club is almost complete. Maryland developer Greenberg Gibbons is nearing the end of construction for its Garner Commerce Park at 2525 Highway 70 in Southeast Garner. The 128,000 square foot park with Class A flex industrial space will be ready for tenant upfits by August. Greenberg Gibbons president Alex LaPerouse says the park should be complete by the end of 2023. The park is made up of three buildings with sizes of 37,785 square feet, 40,805 square feet, and 49,490 square feet. The project cost $35 million and was funded through a joint venture partnership and did not need financing via a bank loan, according to LaPerouse. And now we have four articles on the On Healthcare and Higher Ed page, written by Zach Ezone. Durham MedTech makes acquisition, Restored buying public company based in Massachusetts. A medical device firm with ties to Duke University is acquiring a public company in a cash deal. Restored of Durham, and that's spelled R-E-S-T-O-R, backwards three as the E-D. Restored of Durham is paying $2.27 per share in cash for Conformis, a medical technology company with headquarters in Massachusetts. The price represents a 96% premium to Conformis' closing stock price on June 22nd and is equal to around $17 million given the amount of outstanding shares. The Conformis Board of Directors unanimously signed off on the merger, which will require the approval of stockholders, according to a filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. The companies anticipate that the deal will close in the third quarter. After that, Conformis stock will be delisted from the NASDAQ. For Restore, the acquisition comes after it filed paperwork in late May for a $12 million raise. The company also raised about $23 million in 2022, according to SEC filings. The deal will create a leading personalized 3D printed medical device company. Restore CEO Kurt Jacobus said in a statement, "We see tremendous opportunity to offer clinical, differentiated, and cost-effective solutions across the orthopedic landscape, including shoulder, foot, and ankle, spine, and large joints," Jacobus said. In addition to Jacobus, Restored's leadership team includes Ken Gall, co-founder and chief financial officer, who is a professor at Duke. Conformis, which had 295 full-time employees at the end of last year, saw its stock price raise nearly 90% after the deal's announcement. But over the past year, the company's stock has fallen about 77%. In November, Conformis implemented a reverse stock split after falling out of compliance with a NASDAQ rule that requires listed companies to maintain a stock price at or above a dollar a share. Conformis last year reported product revenue of about $57.8 million, a slight drop from $58.3 million in 2021. Conformis ended the first quarter with $37.8 million in cash, an amount that the company expects would support its operations and capital expenditures for a year, according to its quarterly filing with the SEC. Duke spin-out sold to venture-backed firm. Solve Therapeutics of San Diego has acquired Cereus, spelled C-E-R-E-I-U-S, a preclinical stage company co-founded by Duke University professor Michael Zalutsky and former professor Kimberly Blackwell. As part of the deal, Solve is making an undisclosed upfront payment to Cereus shareholders, who are also eligible to receive additional development, regulatory, and commercial milestone payments. Additionally, the company's shareholders could receive potential royalties on net sales from therapeutic and diagnostic products that Solve successfully commercializes. Solve, which launched late last year, plans to continue building a presence in the Triangle. The company has leased more than 4,500 square feet of laboratory space at the BioLabs NC Grad Lab building in downtown Durham to support research and development activities. NC regulators place insurer in receivership. North Carolina officials have placed a health insurer in receivership due to its financial troubles. The North Carolina Department of Insurance is filing a petition for receivership in Wake County Superior Court that will see the regulator take control of the assets of Friday Health Plans of North Carolina, subsidiary of a Denver company that's winding down operations. Insurance Commissioner Mike Causey made the decision to place the company into receivership to protect policyholders due to Friday's reported insolvency and inability to raise additional funds from outside investors, he said in a statement. And finally, Durham MedTech names new CEO. Polarean Imaging, that's spelled P-O-L-A-R-E-A-N, a medical imaging company in Durham, has appointed Christopher Van Jaco as CEO to guide its commercial launch following its first regulatory approval. Richard Houlihan, who had led Polarean since 2017, is retiring. Houlihan will assist in a transitional period for the next 6 months. Von Jaco has led private and publicly listed companies focused on various healthcare sectors, such as radiology and pulmonology. He's joining at a pivotal time as Polarian, in late December, received approval from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration for its drug-device combination product called Xenovue, spelled X-E-N-O-V-I-E-W. And our final reporter page is written by Laura Bromette on retail and restaurants. New look coming for Sheetz on Miami Boulevard. Larger concept planned after current building is demolished. A popular gas station and convenience store near Research Triangle Park is set to be replaced. Plans have been filed to turn the Sheetz, located at 3021 South Miami Boulevard at the intersection with TW Alexander Drive, into a new, larger Sheetz. The plans call for the demolition of the current convenience mart, the fuel pumps and canopy, and the car wash tunnel. A new version of all three structures will be built in the same spots. The proposed building measures a total of 6,123 square feet, while the current building measures 5,120 square feet. The plans were filed on June 12 and are under review by the City of Durham. It's actually decreasing the amount of impervious surface by 0.02 of an acre, says city planner Cole Renegar. I think it's mostly for better circulation and safety of the site. The applicant on the plans is listed as Sheetz Incorporated. The property is owned by Wedco LLC. The entity purchased the property in 2008 for $2.45 million. The 2.26-acre lot and buildings have a total appraisal value of $2.66 million, according to Durham County property records. The site plans show the construction of six new fuel pumps, new underground fuel tank infrastructure, and a 1,649-square-foot car wash. The convenience mart would have 4,000 square feet of retail space and 2,132 square feet dedicated to a restaurant. Filings depict the restaurant as MTO, the Sheetz own made-to-order brand. Plans also call for 46 parking spaces, bike racks, an air pump station, and a small outdoor seating area. The gas station is in front of a retail plaza with tenants including the Durham Police Department, LabCorp, Gussie's Place, V's Kitchen, Danny's Barbecue, and Jersey Mike's Subs. Convenience Architecture and Design PC is listed as the architecture firm on the project, and Kimley Horn is listed as the engineering firm. Sheetz is also replacing its gas station on Aviation Parkway near Raleigh-Durham International Airport. The company has demolished the existing building and is building a larger structure. New cookout planned in growing corridor of Lake Boone Trail near UNC Rex Hospital. Site plans have been filed for a new cookout restaurant on Lake Boone Trail. Located at 4112 Lake Boone Trail, the empty lot is situated among other new developments in between a city barbecue restaurant and a CVS pharmacy. A Panera Bread and an apartment complex are also nearby. The location is in the Blue Ridge Corridor. Is just outside of the Beltline and in close proximity to UNC Health Rex Hospital. Plans show a 1,830-square-foot building that appears to have no indoor seating. The building would feature a two-lane drive-through system similar to other cookout locations. The project is currently under review. And finally, new car wash coming on Bunkie's site. Two buildings at the intersection of Glenwood Avenue and Pleasant Valley Road have been demolished to make way for a new business. The former buildings were home to Bunkie's Car Wash and a Centura Bank branch. Now a new car wash is being built in their place. The new car wash will be an American Pride Express wash, according to city records. The building is currently under construction and will measure 4,531 square feet. The 1.5-acre lot is located at 6450 Glenwood Avenue and 4209 Pleasant Valley Road. The property was sold by BFM Realty LLC to Flash Express LLC, now operating as American Ventures 4, for $2 million in September 2019. And now we turn to the Viewpoint page, where we have a guest opinion column written by Jay Chowdhury, who is the Senate Democratic Whip in North Carolina. The headline, Time to Establish a New Hindi Language Fund. Last week, President Joseph Biden hosted Prime Minister Narendra Modi of the Republic of India for an official visit to the United States, only the third world leader invited by President Biden. The visit marked Modi's sixth visit to the United States since 2014. Like past visits, the meeting offered the chance to deepen the relationships between the world's oldest democracy and the world's largest democracy in such areas as defense, clean energy, and space. However, both countries should prioritize the teaching of Hindi, the world's third most spoken language, in American schools as a way to build long-term economic ties. That's why Biden and Modi should establish a joint New Hindi Language Fund through the Asia Society to teach Hindi in American middle schools and high schools. There's a strong economic argument for investing in teaching Hindi in American schools. The S&P Global forecasts India to surpass Japan and Germany as the third largest economy in the world. Morgan Stanley projects India's gross domestic product will double from current levels by 2031. In 2021, bilateral trade between both countries reached a record $157 billion in goods and services. India moved up three places to become America's ninth largest trade partner. As India continues to rapidly grow as a global economic power, Americans should place a priority on teaching the Hindi language. Americans who speak Hindi can help our companies export more goods and services in manufacturing, agriculture, and information technology. A new generation of American Hindi speakers can open markets to a country that some financial observers believe represents a once-in-a-generation economic shift. As background, our American educational system doesn't put a premium on foreign language teaching. Most students begin foreign language study in high school when it may be too late for a child to speak a language as well as a native speaker. But according to the Commission on Language Learning, only 58% of middle schools and 25% of elementary schools offer a foreign language. In comparison, most developed countries mandate foreign language instruction between the ages of 5 and 10. In China and Korea, English language instructions for a student starts at the age of 8. A joint New Hindi Language Fund to teach Hindi in American schools would accelerate the need to address this mismatch where the federal government has failed to provide foreign language support in these growing foreign markets. The best model comes from a country that takes extraordinary pride in its language, France. Just last December, French President Emmanuel Macron announced a new initiative to support access to French language instruction across the U.S., including the French Dual Language Fund, a program that expands and supports K-12 programs in Title I schools, and the new Pathways to Teaching French programs, a program that targets the shortage of foreign language instructors in American schools. The latter program creatively leverages the skills of French-speaking Americans of all backgrounds by offering scholarships to train these new French teachers. The new Hindi Language Fund can follow this model. The fund can provide financial support to expand the Hindi language in K-12 programs across the country. Similarly, the fund could offer financial assistance to Americans speaking Hindi, including Indian Americans, to train Hindi teachers. In addition, this new fund could support cultural initiatives that would complement Hindi language instruction, including hosting Indian artists who would visit American schools where Hindi is taught. The U.S.-India relationship is among the most important in modern international politics, and efforts to foster a greater understanding of the Hindi language and India in the American education system is a crucial element to building upon this relationship. We hope President Biden and Prime Minister Modi will use this meeting to establish this new Hindi language fund that will help the next generation of American students as India's economic influence grows. And also on the Viewpoint page, we have a column written by Alexander Sirota. She's the executive director of the NC Budget and Tax Center in Raleigh. And actually, that's a typo. That should be Alexandra Sirota. The headline, Senate Tax Plan Would Create Revenue Gap. The NC Senate Tax Plan makes current tax spending levels already at historic lows unsustainable. If these tax cuts are enacted, future lawmakers will have to pursue deeper budget cuts or increase taxes or fees on most North Carolinians to balance the budget each year. The Senate tax plan would step down the personal income tax rate from the current rate of 4.75% to 2.49% after 2029. These rate reductions primarily benefit the richest few and reduce the availability of public funds to bolster the economic well-being of all North Carolinians and their communities through good schools, good jobs, and bustling main streets. Some legislative leaders have obscured the consequences of cutting taxes for the rich through income tax rate reductions by scheduling them well into the future, which obscures a full accounting of how these tax cuts affect all North Carolinians. State budgets only show the impact over the next 2 years, and so lawmakers can hide the full impact of their policies from the public, even as they automatically go into effect when specific dates are reached. The estimated total impact of the Senate tax cuts is reflected in budget proposals as $1 billion less revenue in fiscal year 2024-25, whereas the full impact of tax changes will be $7.6 billion less revenue every year when fully implemented in fiscal year 2029-30. Even under the most conservative spending assumptions, growing the state budget by population plus inflation, spending would exceed revenue in fiscal year 2026-27 without additional legislative action. In that same year, the current support to meet needs provided by federal, state, and local fiscal recovery funds from the American Rescue Plan will also end, creating dual fiscal cliffs that threaten the state's ability to meet people's needs. By the year when the full Senate tax plan is fully implemented, the state would have an estimated $7.1 billion revenue gap, assuming that current service and spending levels are maintained. This is not the full measure of the gap that the Senate tax plan would create between what is needed and what will be collected, because the baseline doesn't reflect requirements like adequately and equitably funding our schools via the Leandro plan. As the state Supreme Court ruled in November 2022, the Leandro plan sets forth the additional new programs, policy changes, and investments necessary to meet every student's constitutional right to a sound basic education by the 2027-28 school year. Just considering the requirement to fund the Leandro plan increases North Carolina's revenue gap to $12.8 billion. North Carolina simply cannot continue to reduce personal income tax rates without a significant reduction in public services or a shift in the tax load to those with the lowest incomes. Both will hamper the state's ability to deliver a high quality of life and necessary support to well-being that our families deserve. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the top stories from around the state. First, we have Bank of America to target new markets, Charlotte Bank to enter Wisconsin, Alabama, Nebraska, Louisiana. This is written by Simone Graham of the Charlotte Business Journal. Charlotte-based Bank of America Corporation laid out plans June 27 to enter 9 new markets. That includes adding branches in 4 new U.S. states. By 2026, Bank of America expects to expand into Birmingham and Huntsville, Alabama, Boise, Idaho, Dayton, Ohio, Louisville, Kentucky, Madison and Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Omaha, Nebraska, and New Orleans. That means the bank will add its first branches in Nebraska, Wisconsin, Alabama, and Louisiana. With these expansions, B of A will operate branches in more than 200 markets across 39 states, the bank said. As part of our high-tech and high-touch approach, we continue to invest in digital capabilities and to modernize our financial centers to reach more clients and meet their evolving needs, B of A CEO Brian Moynihan said. By expanding our capabilities in these markets, we are able to better serve clients and help drive local community growth and development. B of A plans to expand to Omaha first, opening 2 new financial centers in the city this year. It expects to add 5 branches there by 2025. The bank will also wrap up its multi-year renovations of financial centers across the U.S. by the end of this year. That means more than 2,500 branches will have been revamped with a more modern design. Levine noted during the conference that plan has served as a key capital investment for the banking giant. As part of its renovation strategy, B of A will also grow the number of community banking centers it operates from 600 to 700. The centers serve to help boost financial resiliency and economic mobility by providing communities with greater access to jobs and core banking products, services, technology, and capital, B of A said. In 2022, B of A had opened 58 new centers. The bank said it aims to open more than 55 new locations across 34 markets this year. Over the last decade, it expanded its branch presence in 9 cities across Colorado, Minnesota, Indiana, Pennsylvania, Utah, Ohio, and Kentucky. And our next article is from the Triad Business Journal. The Carroll Companies goes to court over ratings. One of the Triad's highest-profile development groups is suing the National Credit and Business Directory Company Dun & Bradstreet over allegations it published unfavorable ratings based on incorrect information and wouldn't correct it when asked. The case was filed June 16 in federal court. Dun & Bradstreet's handling of allegations of incorrect business information resulted in an April 2022 order in which the Federal Trade Commission directed it to delete information businesses tell it is incorrect or to reconfirm its accuracy. Carroll Management and 5 other business units in Greensboro-based The Carroll Companies alleged that Dun & Bradstreet gave operating units high-risk ratings. In fact, the complaint says, plaintiffs each and all are and have been established companies with strong credit histories and solid financials, which promptly satisfy their contractual obligations. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Executive Voice Q&A column that focuses on Amy Carroll. The headline, A Lifelong Passion for Real Estate. Amy Carroll grew up in the business and now leads Trademark Properties. And this interview was by Kaylee Thompson. Amy Carroll was raised with real estate in her blood. She has 23 years of professional experience in the industry, but it's more like her entire life since her dad built custom homes and her mom was a real estate broker. I grew up going to job sites on the way to everywhere. If we were going to dinner, we were going to houses. We never went directly. There was no direct route anywhere that didn't involve some sort of project or house, Carroll says. I worked on construction sites at 13. The second I was allowed to work, I wanted to work. There was no question for me. After high school, she interned at a multifamily corporate office where, by the time she was 21, she was promoted to assistant to the regional vice president and was overseeing 3 states. Fast forward 16 years to 2019 when she became president of Trademark Properties in Raleigh. She's held the position since. What's on tap for Trademark in 2023? Our goal at Trademark is to help foster generational wealth. One way we're doing that is through helping different generations of people with their real estate and making sure that they get the best value for their investment. We're also doing something internally that is a little different where we create a TNP Invest, where we've purchased a property and we're allowing employees to invest in our property in order to take our mission as the company and make sure that we're actually doing that internally as well. I just launched our new website, and we have several new business campaigns that are mainly related to helping people with recession-proofing, people whose loans are maturing soon, people who are in the market for space. Those are our three-pronged approach to business development right now that will hopefully have a ripple effect in the triangle. We're not expanding into any new business lines. What we're doing is creating different opportunities in terms of how we're marketing and what we're focusing on as a result of the increase in interest rates. Because of the increased interest rates, lenders have tightened their lending guidelines as it relates to commercial real estate, and because of that, it is more difficult for people to be more capitalized in order to purchase. People have been comfortable with the lower interest rates over the last few years. It feels uncomfortable, and people are uncertain of how to move forward, so people are slower to invest. We're having to do a lot more searching about the financing fees and what that involves and underwriting for those purchases so people can evaluate whether that's the right opportunity for them right now. We're doing it a lot more detailed underwriting, educating of clients, but we're still seeing so much demand in our market, especially from out of the area. We get a lot of interest from people coming from New York, San Francisco, top 10 markets in the U.S. Also, what we're seeing is this influx of buyers, whether that's for retail centers, land or industrial, or land for multifamily, where so many people want to buy the exact same thing in the triangle. It's becoming increasingly hard to find product to service that number of buyers. How do you see the leasing market playing out in the triangle? In the next 6 months, we'll continue to see people repurposing buildings and creating things out of, for example, old big box space. So seeing things transition more into the services area, we'll still continue to have a lot of industrial and flex demand and continue to need more product in that arena. We'll see flex and retail continue to thrive. What will the office leasing market look like in the Triangle this year? I have the opposite view of many people who continue to quote flight to quality. In our markets, flight to quality means towers, and there is a lingering COVID effect when it comes to towers and the density that those towers are built for. The comfort level of employees isn't back 100% to embrace that level of density. We're still watching things play out, but people are very hesitant due to long-term renewals after COVID. So a lot of office leases did a 1-2 year renewal. And now we're seeing the typical 3-5-7 year renewal back because people are looking for that consistency that they can plan for. Are you seeing more new leases or subleases? This year, we've certainly seen a lot more leases, retail leases especially. We've done more retail leases in the first quarter and potentially the first half of the year. Our sales are still steady, but people are slowing a little bit in terms of purchasing based on interest rates. We haven't had to offer incentives or deals to get leases done. It's been incredibly strong. Even in our office products, we're still holding steady on rates. TI, tenant improvements, has crept up a little, mainly more so because of construction prices. Favorite summer activity? I definitely love going to the beach, reading, traveling, spending time with my puppy. Best advice you've ever been given? It's from my first boss in commercial real estate. He had such high integrity that he placed importance on never promising something that you can't deliver. Favorite place to visit in the Triangle? My favorite restaurant is Stanberry. And in a section called A Closer Look, title, president, principal, age 41, education, BA, management, society and sociology, UNC Chapel Hill, MBA, Meredith College, family, my puppy, Charlie, first job, summer intern at multifamily corporate office. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll go through and read the big number sections that are sprinkled throughout the this edition. The first big number is $3 million, the amount raised by Pendo co-founder Eric Boduck for his startup RevCast, a central hub to build and manage revenue plans that drive predictability and deliver insights to stakeholders with less burden on financial teams. The seed round was led by CRV. And the next is $80 million. That's how much Stonehenge Apartments in North Raleigh sold for to Two Sigma Real Estate, a real estate investment arm of New York hedge fund Two Sigma. The company acquired it from Investcorp International Realty Incorporated, an investment bank in New York. And next is $24 million. That's how much Brii Biosciences, and that Brii is spelled B-R-I-I, is receiving for its stake in Qpex Biopharma, a San Diego firm being acquired by the Japanese pharmaceutical company Shionogi. Brii, which has headquarters in Durham and China, also received exclusive global rights to a drug that's under clinical development through a previous partnership with Qpex. And we have a key number, 2.6%. That was the operating margin Advance Auto Parts of Raleigh reported in its most recent quarterly earnings report. The figure shows how far the Fortune 500 retailer is behind its peers. Competitors AutoZone and O'Reilly Auto Parts both reported operating margins above 19%. And now we'll read from the He Said It, She Said It sections, quotes sprinkled throughout the Triangle Business Journal. The first one is from David Sabo, the healthcare and technology lead for HSBC, on the British bank launching HSBC Innovation Banking, a specialized banking proposition that will support the innovation economy. As we think about the ambitions of your entrepreneurs locally, they're not there to be a dominant business in North Carolina. They have global ambitions. And next is Lawrence Yun, chief economist, National Association of Realtors. Newly constructed homes are selling at a pace reminiscent of pre-pandemic times because of abundant inventory in that sector. However, existing home sales activity is down sizably due to the current supply being roughly half the level of 2019. And our final quote is a She Said It section, Chef Chidi Kumar, on her new restaurant, Aja, spelled A-J-J-A. The space is designed to feel like an oasis, she says, and is located at the back of the building at 209 Bickett Boulevard in Raleigh. Our space directed the style of food, helping remove the formality of the dining experience while retaining our intentionality and thoughtfulness. And with our remaining minutes, we'll turn back to our 40 under 40 listing and read some more of those. And our next one is concerning Ishmael Ism Montag, CEO of Seven International, and that's spelled S-E, the number 7-E-N. His age is 26, birthplace Raleigh, family James E. Montag Jr. and Wanza Montag, education Enlow High School, description music production. What accomplishments are you most proud of? Producing the World Cup FIFA Coca-Cola 2018 colors, going triple platinum, Chuck Davis Award, and being a dad. What community causes or charities have you been involved in during the past year? Leaders of Tomorrow. What is the greatest obstacle you have overcome in your career? Trusting yourself, developing a sense of decrement, controlling your own mind. Nothing makes me madder than doing things twice. Who would make the guest list for your dream business lunch? My whole family. What is your secret talent? Cooking. And what is a key lesson you learned along the way? You are the five people you hang around. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll turn to the back to the Viewpoint page for the Business Pulse survey. The question, should vacant office buildings be turned into housing? The total number of responses was 115. 59% say worth consideration, but it's not a one-size-fits-all solution. 31% say yes, and 10% say no. And we're going to go ahead and stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. And if you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.